Rejoice, rejoice, Emmanuel. Though the words, it varies a lot, and I repeat myself horribly. Anyway. This is Cone Meander on Case Demo. Oh, I'm grateful. I'm grateful for life. I mostly serve my family. I think the grand scheme of things just counts. Oh. I was pondering as I showered and such this morning. Some of the, you could call them themes, but it's the different, almost the different journeys each character takes. I think we've already talked about Tesreen, or I've written about it. To see her path, which is ultimately ends with being diverted from God. Melisenda I kind of don't feel like the Appalachian wife is very appropriate. Even the cultural milieu that she and Dave are come from. She and Dave are married. And Wesleyan is their son. But her role is primarily the brains. And leader of the family. Such as it is. when we catch them at the very beginning of the prophecy volume, the two men are out fishing, because that's what they do, and they bring it back to Melisandre for, and I think they also help with the gutting and the preparation, but that's mostly her bailiwick for anything else at this moment. It's been 18 years since the events of escape. I was tempted to just jump into Davor, but I'm not going to. Davor's just kind of a tag-along for the most part. He helps Melisandre do what Melisandre decides is what needs to be done. Westland's an independent sort, their child, but that, well, I'm not talking about that either. I'm talking about Melisandre. So, her main motivation in this in this story is to introduce the words of Kiami to those that she had known in her growing up, you know, Corin and others. Not, you know, it's not specific to that. Of course, in the first story, the only character we really keep an eye on is Corin, outside of Mulz and Davor. So that's really who we continue to concentrate on here. Although I think there is just a larger social, almost social class that she wants to introduce what she has learned to them. They have gotten a copy of records kept by Kiami from the Waykeep community. Although they have never joined the Waykeep community, you know, the actual covenant and work that one does, which is mostly keeping that path, which is a lot of, can I be honest, slaughtering people. This is an interesting thing, and a lot of what they learned about the covenant was that covenant to keep that path. And to be the arms and limbs of the protection of this land. Although you go and you look and you go, why should you feel Why should you feel beholden to protect it? You know, if you knew anything about Palladius and Cassandra's descendants that live on First Home, there isn't a whole lot there to feel like they had been righteous once and following God. Anyway, so, and there's the whole thing of the story that came of their first fall. You know, pride, Trachean, all that, but that is another story outside of this. And of course, when they ultimately destroy themselves and they see their replacements being brought there by the Mariner, and it's all about the story, and I don't know if it's really lore or what, but around the Mariner, which is a Christ figure that brings people to this blessed place of protection from the outside world, because the outside world rages like mad. But this, you know, this isn't a big land on any level whatsoever. The island is small. There is just a strip of land between these barrier mountains and the channel before you get to the sea. You know, This could functionally be some little isolated place in the Pacific Northwest, for instance, of the United States and Canada. You know, it could be any given estuary. I sometimes think of it as kind of a Shangri-La. Maybe somewhere in the very north of Canada, there's a whole bunch of channels and little islands and things like that. And, you know, you could be any of those places. So, you know, for just when you say, well, how am I supposed to locate this? You go, I don't really have a concept of it. And I don't try to give one. I don't try to give people an idea of what it could be, but it could be any tiny island just off of the coast of some larger land with a barrier on it. So you go, well, it sounds like it's deserty, vaguely, you know. It's hard to say. We do have, you know, the actual Sericole Island, which is further to the north that Julia and her group flee to. And that's really cold in the story. Ultimately, you know, can I be really honest? He said, I put such, it isn't just a time barrier between the individual stories. It tends to go kind of generationally. We have the young adults of one group, and then we find, you know, and then we're talking about their children in the next group. And, you know, it's always about 17, 18, 19 years between the individual stories at least. And gives a time to have a baby, and then to see that baby as they come into adulthood and what they do in the life they live. Anyway, so Malasinda, you know, the first time we met her, she was 16, 17, and now her child that she was impregnated with sometime in that range, probably 18-ish, is now 18. So she would be, what, 36 years old? This is not old, you know. The only thing that makes her seem haggard at all is the work she's been doing, you know, being a, I don't know what it's called, I don't know if it's a fishmonger, maybe. And I'll have to go back and look it up. Anyway. Totally different from her life as a lady, which was mostly to be catered to. To be the titular head of some house. She never got to there, but that was the culture she came from. And that was the place she was getting to. And her break away from it. And in cleaning, gutting, preparing fish, which they traded to trade to Wakeheath. The work at Wakeheath has been building more. More groups have been trying to come through the pass. So that was her life. And one can say that she kind of pined for the culture she came from. The fact that she was going to be a beauty queen. Not of any other way to look at it. And live kind of a Disney princess life. Being beloved by all of her subjects. She was certainly going for it and seemed to be doing much better than her friend Corin, who looked upon her coming place in great pride. Of course, Corin for reasons did not become a lady. I don't know exactly how that works. There's kind of a debutante thing from it, but it also seems like there's only some slots. And young women that don't make it become dames. And these are there's some working class to it. The servants of the ladies ostensibly, but very much still bearing status. You know, there are lower castes that they govern. And of course, among the dames themselves, there are the matrons, their leadership. And what they do with their time, their interests. So, Moles is being while she's on the seashore, as a fishwife, every night after a hard day when it's time to relax, she sits and she reads the stories of Aladius and Cassandra and their children. Of which she, Moles, is at least traditionally among the daughters of Ceredio, which was the righteous queen among the Aled. At the very beginning, there was first a brother and sister who were married, and they were king and queen. Trachane gets seduced. And falls. Anyway, so these are things that might be interesting to try to weave into the story a little bit more. As they go along, I think they take a record system. The interesting thing, though, is that the people in Waykeep, although they have kept these records since time immemorial, and they are sacred to them, Kiami who invested Wakey. And established the covenant of protection of this land. The people in Waykeep really don't read those records. It isn't a thing for them. And so Moles really ends up being the first person that really invests herself into these things. Westland is inspired by the stories, of course, and very much sees the nobility of the Waykeep Covenant. Wants to take it upon himself, but he's only now getting to the place, to the age, to the maturity where he could take upon himself that covenant. So he, although he looks forward to it, it hasn't happened yet. And Davor just isn't that sort. He isn't a valiant man, can I tell you. He isn't an inspiring person at all. He's willing to go along in righteous pursuits. And it's really interesting that he is the person that sees these visions of what's going to happen. He doesn't sound excited. You know, he's not interested in really going. But then I'm getting off of Moles. Anyway, Moles comes back to land with her book that she's compiled of the sacred records kept in Waykeep. That she's copied. In fact, that was kind of the whole thing. In this intervening time, it just makes reference to the fact that first they go and they live among the people in Waykeep, but Davor isn't big on joining the covenant. He's just not the type. And Moles has this cultural problem with the work of keeping the covenant, which is basically slaughter. Everybody who tries to come to the pass must die. And you have to have somebody do it. You know, somebody needs to be the hand of God in doing what God has promised. And that's what these people are. And you can sit there and go, ooh, that's gruesome. And you go, a lot of things about God can be a little gruesome. Regardless. So, so they can only be harbored at Waykeep for a certain amount of time, and during that time, Moles is introduced to this record of Kiami as she decides that she wants to make a copy of it. She always has a mind to take this information and take it to the people at First Home, back to her people. And as they begin to understand that the traditions and lies of the convocation of ladies is what it is, and what the truth is that she would like to spread to, you know, she's trying to do kind of a truth dump. That's really a cool little treat. So that was her original reason from doing it. And I think out of just sheerly needing something to do besides, after a long day of gutting fish and you're trying to calm down, get ready for bed, she reads her copy to her family. Of the words of Kiami and about what is out there. And this is all very so in her heart she still has this thing. It's just a question. I don't know if she's waiting for a particular time, if something triggers her on some level. We're going to have to figure out exactly what. No, it really is. It comes from the drain of people. I forget the guy's name. Who leaves the covenant and leaves the community and takes several families with him. Promises them that they'll go and they'll find a place that is more pleasant to live, and doesn't exact the rigors of protection. You know, his whole justification was that upon learning more about what's going on at First Home, primarily from Melisenda, that he doesn't want any part of protecting that anymore. He doesn't see the purpose in doing it. So that's what gets them to just leave. And with that done, Waykeep really can't do things. And can't fulfill its mission. And the solution that's come up with for Ennis, and somewhat from Tessarine, is to go and collect. You know, it comes through inspiration, through dreams or whatever else, that says this is where to go to get new people to reinvest Waykeep. They will be doing what Kiami did. He gathered up righteous people that were willing to covenant to protect the land. when he first invested away, now it's time to reinvest it to keep this place protected. And Moles feels several things. She feels somewhat responsible. I forget what his name was. Calder. No, it wasn't like that. Calder was a whole different. He was the next generation down. Anyway, the leaving of this people, she felt like she had instigated it when she was doing her copying. You know, she would share what she was learning as she copied this record. It's a good thing she copied it, because in what ultimately ended up being kind of a partial fall of Waykeith, I think these records were either absconded with or destroyed. So Mole's copy is really the only complete, you know, together version of Kiyomi's record. Anyway, so these are some of the things that prompt Mole Ascended to become part of the party, the group. It's not much of one, it's very small. That go to find new people. And what ends up happening is they have to convert them on a certain level. Each one according to their own devices. Of course, Tessarine is kind of a new seduction. And what's left of the convocation or the matron class in the culture draws her in. And she walks away from the covenant just as families did before. Although hers was more of a seduction. The other ones were more of, aren't you tired of working so hard for nothing? Was what their leader their leader was doing. And of course, Ennis was totally with it, but let me tell you, he wasn't so much a teacher and that people would love to listen to them. That was more Melisenda. And the fact that she kind of had a consort, that's the word. The whole concept of women having consorts, Moles and Davor retained. You know, she was definitely the decision maker. And Davor was supposed to be the eye candy on her arm, her escort. And they still retain that sort of a relationship, although it's always been odd because Davor was really never much to look at. He was, you know, he was kind of scrawny and stuff like that. Anyway. So Moles returns, and Moles in the halls and chambers and houses of the ladies of the convocation, she starts to read her copy of Kiami's records, and she starts to share stories with them from it. And that is what really inspires Michiana, who is among the beauty queens. She is the royal princess. She doesn't have to compete anymore. You know, she is kind of the vice president, if you had any thoughts about that. You know, there really isn't, not to say that there's much of a function that the actual queen performs. But this is kind of the tail end of the convocation. It's already starting to dissolve anyway. And although, you know, and it's traditional, a more highly placed lady has her choice of who she wants for a consort, and after Davor seems to be some kind of a prophet. It only comes from these dreams that he had from before that show him what's going to happen in the future. That's kind of what a prophet is. And she acquires him as her consort. Now, Moles didn't want this to happen, and she had thought that they had gone a little way beyond that particular part of the convocation culture, and she thought Davor would remain loyal to her. And he's conflicted, but does he become the queen's consort? He does. And there is some question I don't know if Davor has sexual relations with the queen. I really don't. She acquires him strictly for power. For power's sake in these really weird times of the convocation itself. It would make sense that Davor had relations with the queen, because the queen was, you know, the whole idea of the nursery and of everybody coming into it and not really knowing what their background is kind of falling off to being, you know, who's who, and the queen is still following the thing of, you know, the greatest thing you can be is pregnant. You know, Samantha is the matriarch. She's still doing her kind of on some level. She's still doing her breeding program, and Dave Moore was definitely what's called a double sire. In that, well, anyway, this is an old concept. I don't even know if it really made it into Escape particularly. Might have. For how he was being watched over. And look, I'm going to read it here pretty soon again. And it'll become something. Anyway, so on two or three levels still, Davor is still a very attractive figure, although he doesn't fit the mold at all. And he brings out some of his more unsavory things. His loyalty to his lady is questionable at best. As soon as some better lady comes along, swishing her skirts and saying, "Why don't you come with me?" He does, you know, and it kind of is kind of a ritualistic, I don't know if it's a trap, but seduction to catch yourself a consort. Now the consorts want to be caught, and they're certainly trained and taught that the highest thing they can do is give loyalty to their lady. And Moles is very sad because she thought that they had gotten past it. She thought in all the reading of the things of Kiami that Davor would have picked up, you know, a better manner, a better way of being. But when it came down to it, he didn't. And did it cause some problems with the mission? Absolutely. Davor ended up very disloyal, really wasn't there for Mulz as she was slowly being poisoned by Corin. Still very vindictive of what Melisandre got and Corin did in not being able to be a lady. And although Melisandre shared a lot of things, and Corin played along, you know, saying, "Oh, I'm listening, and oh, I hear what you're saying, and oh, it's this and this, oh my goodness, yes." The path to power for Corin was to continue supporting the convocation. And Mulz was trying to get people away from the convocation and trying to get them to pair up men and women in a much more godly way, and then go and reinvest Waykeep, many some of them. It wasn't that all of them needed to go. That really wasn't Moles' thing. That was Ennis' thing. And Moles would tell about her experience and how she learned what was going on. Samantha was being slowly killed off by Corin as well. As Corin wanted to be the matriarch, she couldn't be the queen, but the far more powerful, as she had come to learn, and much more amazing role, the person who really ran society was the matriarch. And Samantha went through her whole thing to try and do it, and yeah, she was ready to die. She was tired of all this stuff. Anyway, Moles was in this milieu, trying to make this happen. She would continue to read to people even while she was being poisoned and getting sicker and sicker, and it was more and more difficult for her. She would still have people in, and she would still read to groups. You know, she was becoming quite the thing for, can I be honest, otherwise pretty bored group of ladies to do, you know. Reading literature was something very ladylike to do. And listening and telling stories. And Moles just had these interesting new stories that nobody had told before. So it was very interesting. And it really caught hold of a number of people, including Michiana, who was the current standing princess, who would take over as queen upon the queen's death. And of course, once we see what happens, we do see that the queen died. And the only person, and there was starting to be this strange change. The beauty pageants themselves were really not very, you know, were kind of starting to die out in prominence. And as it was revealed that these ladies were being taken out, you know, killed, if they weren't good breeders to the breeding program, as soon as that was brought to light, it was getting suspected anyway, but Melisandre brought back, I don't know if it's so much proof, but she said, look, here is my child, and he's my son. And you go, double sire, Davor. And Melisandre definitely somebody who probably would have become the queen if she had remained at first home. She really wasn't out to look like a rebel, but because she wasn't trying to be queen. She wasn't competing in competitions. And this was starting to attract a lot of attention among the other ladies. They were saying, you know, I am the Duchess of Fish, why shouldn't I just retain my house? And the girls that issue from me, why shouldn't the title be more hereditary? That was originally how it was with, or at least how it started going with Sarah Dio. People acclaimed her daughters, even though her daughters were ultimately ruined by Sabra and became the Convocation of Ladies. And Sabra became kind of the first matriarchal figure. Everybody said, well, if we're going to go back to an earlier form, it makes sense that the daughters of existing ladies who have title and status should stay. And that's where came Julia. You know, the queen died. Really kind of the last of those who would die if they couldn't, if they weren't producing all girls, which is what the lie was. Anyway, so Maul's brings this information and kind of ruins the convocation. I think on some level she gets some satisfaction out of that. That she influenced other things to happen.
Oh my. How did it get so late?
This isn't the Ragnar. Anyway, well, there it is. I didn't want to get there that early anyway. Probably the greatest thing that happened was Mishiana decided to align herself with the Mariner himself and to say, I want to be a follower of the Mariner. I want to do the things the Mariner wanted people to do. And she was becoming a very righteous person. Married Lanalil, well, it was tricky what ultimately happened. It's actually written down in the notes. It's okay. Westland has a bit of a fall. He is bitter for not being accepted into Wakey. That was his great dream. In the timing that he wanted. And he took Mishiana. Of course, Mishiana was going to be well disposed to the child of Melisandre in the first place. And he had become the consort of Mishiana right about the same time that Davor decided to go and accept the offer to be the consort of the queen. And to firmly embed himself back into the convocation culture. Anyway, so that was what kind of happened to Maul's. Maul's continued to read from the copy that she had. Of this stuff. Westland loves her mother. That's why his mother. That's why he ultimately, number one, he broke with his father, who was going back into this thing. When he was doing the consort thing, it was almost kind of as a play. So we're pretty sure that Julia was actually Westland's daughter. But when Mishiana Mishiana was really about kind of a gradual conversion of the convocation over to more of a kind of a Kiami culture. But with all the things going on with Westland, and with the fact that he hated the convocation for standing by and watching his mother die, and it's like, oh, Corin had took great pride in I guess revealing to Westland that she had killed her mother. You know, so that's the way it works around here. She was an unacceptable lady. Always had been. Never should have become a lady. And that this is what happens to ladies entitled producing boy children. Is that, you know, they're culled from the breeding herd, and you know, and Westland gets very, very angry with the whole thing around the convocation. He wants to be part of its destruction, and he finds these. These groups that want to rise up and destroy the convocation. And he becomes their leader. A lot of them have some weird kind of indoctrinated hang-ups that make it so they can't really step out and take a lead in things, which Westland doesn't have. And so he is very much able to do this, even though they are a dastardly group. Ultimately, to become the conclave, a very, I would say autocratic, but I'm not really even sure of that, a very nasty control group that takes over First Hope, everything about it. And although Lanalil has these kinds of sensibilities, it ultimately becomes Westland's nemesis during this short time here. You know, he's trying to do it through the gradual changes in the convocation. The fact that those guys made this quasi-democratic group of people that to which more authority was being given, and men were part of this too, and he was very, very active and very large in this thing. He was a very charismatic person. Anyway, I didn't want to get into those parts particularly. But it's good to bring them back and to talk about them, because it's going to be the book I'm going to be, the book I'm going to be reading shortly. Be writing shortly, pardon me. So yeah, it's all that stuff. And it's very important in the last story that's already written and done and published, and I'm not going to make revisions on it. I am not going to do Star Wars changes like George Lucas did. So that creates a whole other pile of weirdness. Anyway, so Mulz dies kind of abandoned by Davor, kind of alone. Although Davor did ultimately come back to her bed thing, it was at the instructions of the queen. And it was like, so you didn't come here because you love me. You came here because the queen made you do it. And he isn't extremely decent at all. He gets far better in the last book. There is a whole lot of redemption happening, and one of the redemptive things that happens is Davor. So Mulls makes large sacrifices. You can see this in some of the sacrifices that Christ made and how lonely that situation was. When he wanted to have support from other people, they were either sleeping, not paying attention to what was going on, or when he was up on the cross, God, because of the sins he had taken upon himself, God had to turn his face away and forsake him. And this was, you know, and these were shadows of Christ. I never get down to saying whether the Mariner figure actually was Christ or just represented Christ or something along those lines. We have Christ-like activities going on, but not all centered on a person. We don't know if it happened before Christ's death, after Christ's death, or, you know, we just don't know we can't rectify the time frame with anything that we know. Although I have to say there is kind of a side story, a little itty bitty one that I never really finished, that seemed to come from something akin to modernity, and that is his name Ishmael. Could be Ishmael. Anyway. Bringing people to the place. Now, it's hard to tell. You know, it's not part of any of the stories before, and I'm not saying that any of these stories are even need to represent any kind of truth, any kind of timeline, beyond just internally. The great ship salvation comes, and it comes and it collects who it collects, and takes them to either first home or to Waikiki. Anymore these days, it's been mostly to Waikiki, but it doesn't discount the fact that there could be. In later times, it seems like there is an injection back into first home. But that's far, far into the future when things have started to fall apart very, very much so. And I think we're going to get kind of an end of the Book of Mormon sort of situation where we see one culture dying. It's not really the end of the Book of Mormon. It's kind of like when the Jaredites were destroyed and the Amalekites had already come. So, anyway. We're getting to the thing there. There's Melisenda and what happens to her. She really ends up being the great bridge. She sacrifices herself in being that bridge between what had been and what was going to become. You know, the next golden age. Julia and her descendants. It seems like these queens continue. Julia was the first hereditary queen for a long time, ever since Sarah Dion. So everything that was talked about for Sarah Dion, saying, look, this is what Sarah Dion was, comes to fruition in her. So, I better let this thing go. We'll talk about that. I'll have to put Melisenda on this.